Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
How are you unique? How are you different than anyone else on earth? How are you different from everyone else on earth? What is it that you can do no one else can do? What is it that you know or can communicate that no one else knows or can communicate? How are you, in fact, unique? And you may say, well, Bob, I'm not unique at all. I'm like everyone else. I say, no. Actually, you are different than every person on earth. No one had your parents, were born where you were born, raised where you were raised, had the friends you had, brothers and sisters you had or didn't have, went to school where you did, dated who you did, married who you did, divorced who you did, or whatever. It's like no one on earth is like you. No one had the opportunities you've had. No one had the hardships you've had. No one had the suffering you've had. No one has been prepared by God like you have in this earth. So, how are you, in fact, unique? I'd like to share with you three specific ways that I would encourage you to begin defining, honing, refining your understanding of your uniqueness. Number one is to realize that you are smart. Now, when I say that, some of you say, of course I knew I was smart. You know, why are you telling me this? I say, you know what? A lot of very smart people think, oh, I'm not smart. My dad told me when I was a kid, I'm not smart. I say, everyone is smart. Everyone is near brilliant. Let me show you how to find where you're smart. You find where you're smart by what is it that you find easy that other people find nearly impossible. There's something in your life that to you it's like, oh, that's easy. There are other people around you saying, how'd you do that so fast? It may be electronics, it may be math, it may be science, it may be understanding of scripture. What is it that you find easy that most people in your life never get? That's part of identify where you are smart. Don't ever believe that you're not smart. Don't believe it. A part of your uniqueness is the unique way in which you're smart. My ability to do calculus, to do trigonometry, etc., is zero. Cheryl's gets A plus all the way through. I'm saying you don't have to be smart everywhere to be smart somewhere. One of the illusions a lot of people have is I have to be smart in everything to really be smart. No. Be smart in the area, unique, specific area God has made you smart in. Find out what that is. Define what that is. By the way, there are four levels of thinking. This is critical for you to understand as you're defining your uniqueness. Level one thinking, which 95% of the people you'll ever meet in your lifetime have, is, I guess everyone is basically like me. Or they will be when they grow up. I say, you know what? Most people think if you're not like them, you're not quite grown up yet. That's wrong. You're grown up, you just aren't like them. And that may be your mother or your father. They may think you're not grown up yet because you're not like them yet. I say, no, you're grown up, you're just not like them. And that applies to smart as well. You're not smart because you're not smart like me. When you grow up and you get really smart, you'll see things I see, says dad or mom or uncle or aunt or cousin or brother or sister. Wrong. When you grow up, you'll see things they don't see. The second level is everyone is not like me. It finally dawns on you, you know what? Some people actually like solving problems. They're not pretending, they actually like it. Or they actually like setting goals. They're not just trying to impress people. They actually like setting goals. I say, yeah. Some people like solving problems. Some people like setting goals. It dawns on you, everyone is not like me. The third level is, oh no, no one is like me. That's what I've been saying to you here today. No one is like you. But the fourth level that you want to get to and stay at is it's okay to be the me that God is creating, that God is developing, that God is bringing into being for the future. For those of you who are young in the room about this smart thing, you may have lots of ideas. You may get lots of ideas. Ideas are a dime a dozen. You think you get $1 million worth of ideas at a dime a dozen. You get millions of ideas. Let me share something with you. Stay with one idea. Take all those ideas you've got. Stay with that one idea until it's successful. Take your very best idea and stay with it until it's successful. Once that idea proves that it's a success, people will trust your ideas even more than they should, perhaps. But until you prove something works, they will simply ignore all of your ideas. And it's frustrating to you. You think, they don't think I'm smart. They don't think I'm an adult. They don't think I'm... I say, no, they really don't. At a certain level, they're just sort of ignoring you until you grow up in their mind. I say, no, take your best idea and actually take it to its completion. And when it's complete and successful, then people will start trusting you with everything else. Maximize your strengths and make your weaknesses irrelevant. Peter Drucker, that's a quote from Peter Drucker. He said, basically, the role of an organization is to maximize the strengths of the individual and make their weakness irrelevant. A part of what you're doing is you're saying, you know what? I may not be smart in trigonometry or geometry or calculus or those kind of things, but I am smart right here. Maximize your strength on where you are smart and make the fact that you're not smart in those irrelevant. I don't apply to be a chemist somewhere or a scientist somewhere because I know I'm not good at it. But that's irrelevant to my being here. I'm saying, find out what you do best and do it. That's where you're smart. I say, in defining and understanding your uniqueness, one of the first things you have to figure out is understanding and trusting the fact that you're smart. Not in all ways, but in a unique way to you. The second thing is to define your unique market or ministry position. In other words, understand not only who am I and the fact that I'm smart enough to carry out a ministry, but what is the ministry I'm to carry out? See your uniqueness as strengths in terms of particularly your unique ministry position. What it is that seemed odd to people when you're young can be a tremendous asset when you're older. Like you may be a tall, thin person when you're a kid. People laugh at you. It's like, when are you going to stop growing, kid? The kind of thing. You turn out to be a world-class basketball player. Or they say, you know, you may find yourself bedridden, but you find yourself a writer in a wheelchair and find yourself a writer. I say, what it is that is a holdback when you're young may be the shaping God's doing to turn you into something excellent in a unique ministry position for the rest of your life. So ask yourself, what is it that in my life people have seen as odd about me, and how can I absolutely maximize that? Well, as a kid, you never stop talking. Well, as an evangelist, you're not supposed to stop talking. You know, it's like, what is it that people as a kid thought was wrong with you, so to speak, that can be used to absolutely maximize your adulthood? The other thing is, what can you do that no one else can do? Of all the people you know, you don't know anyone else that can do it. I'd encourage you to reflect on this one for an hour or so here at this conference. Take some time. while you're away from the day-to-day responsibilities back at the office, back at the ministry, back at the church, whatever, take an hour and reflect on the question, what can I do that no one else I know can do? That's a question you sort of deal with typically when you're about 38 to 43 years old, but it's a question that is a really insightful question. What can I do that no one else I know can do? Because that's a part of your unique ministry position. It's like, if everyone else can do this, why would you try to do that? But if no one else can do it, is that maybe what God has in mind for you to do? And as I may have said earlier, part of your uniqueness may not just be what you can do, but where you can do it. In other words, in your city or village or area, there may be no one else that you know that can do what you can do. Now, in other places they can. Other places they've got people that can do all kinds of things you can do. Maybe do it better. But in your area, in the area you live in, there's no one else can do what you can do. What is that? That may be your unique ministry position. Is where I do it, not just who I am and what I can do, but where I do it may be that uniqueness. What do I enjoy that others seem to dread or avoid? I'm going to tell you just a sort of a silly little story, but when I was a kid, 16 years old, I made my living for the clothes I needed or the car I drove or that kind of thing by catching turkeys. My grandfather and my uncles all had turkey farms. And so we'd go, and when we were working the turkeys, no one liked to catch turkeys. They liked to process them, give them an injection of some kind of vaccination or something, and or put saddles on them, they call saddles on them. They liked to do all kinds of things with the turkeys. No one liked to catch turkeys. What that meant was you get down on your hands and knees in the turkey manure on a cold night, and you catch them by the legs, and you catch them by the top of the saddle, and you put them over on a bale of hay. But it's cold, it's dirty, it's filthy, it's... You know who the turkey catcher was? Me. You know why? Because they always needed a catcher. They'd always pay for someone to catch. I could work as much as I wanted as a catcher. But on some of the other things, they didn't need you tonight. They always needed a catcher, right? What do you enjoy that others seem to dread and avoid? What is it that no one you know likes to do, but you actually don't mind it? It's like, I thought, when I play football, that's building up my upper body. This catching turkeys thing, this is like a workout, right? I'm getting ready for football season. They saw it as just a dirty, ugly, muddy, manure job where you get hit in the face with turkey wings all the time, which hurt when it's cold. And I saw it as getting ready for football season. I said, what is it in your world that the other people in your world want to avoid? They think it's not good to do. But you don't mind doing it. And it can lead to development in you of a very specific expertise that's always in demand or is critical at a given moment. What is that? And then thirdly, your single greatest strengths. By the time you're in this room, there are many things you do better than most people you know. It's like you wouldn't be here if that weren't true. You do things, a lot of things, better than most people you know. The question is, though, what do you do better than most people? That's not the question you should be asking yourself. The question is, of all the things I do well, what do I do best? Of all the things you do well, what do you do best? Because that's where you focus your uniqueness. That's where you focus your attention, on taking that unique strength you've got and absolutely maximizing it. Because if you try to do 15 or 20 things equally well, it won't work. But if you can find that one thing that you do well, exceptionally well, you can apply it in 15 or 20 different areas. But what is it that you uniquely bring to something? What is that? Maybe it's a sense of calm. Maybe it's a sense of sorting out direction. Maybe it's a sense of understanding or people skill or social organizing. I don't know. But what is it that you do better than anyone else you know, but of all the things you do well, that's what you do best? What is that? That's important to know to maximize your uniqueness. You make that a part of your self-concept, that unique strength you've got, so that when you're looking at who am I, who did God make me to be, you basically say, you see, what your self-concept is simply a sum total of all the adjectives you use to describe yourself. That's your self-concept. And if you have a list of positive things about you and a list of negative things about you, and the positive list is way longer than the negative, you have a positive self-concept. And if negative is way longer, you have a negative self-concept. And if a negative becomes a positive, that's personal growth. But one of the positive adjectives you use to describe yourself is that single greatest strength. When someone asks you, what do you do well? Where would you like to fit? What role would you like to play? You need to be prepared with an answer that this is what I would enjoy. I think I can contribute over here. And contribute in the area of your greatest strength. If you're a hand, be a hand. If you're an eye, be an eye. And then age helps define strength. What I've found very, very commonly is that when you're about 40 to 45, you've lived enough that you begin really defining your strengths. You say, okay, here's where I'm strong. Up till then, it's sort of like, I'm strong in a lot of areas, and I don't know quite which one yet, but when you're 40 to 45, you begin really honing in on your strengths. When you're 45 to 50, you begin saying what you don't want to do anymore. It's like, I'm not strong in this, I don't want to do that anymore. And like I quoted earlier, the role of an organization is to maximize the strength of the individual, make his or her weaknesses irrelevant. To understand yourself, you want to understand your uniqueness and your unique contribution to things. You want to understand where you're smart. You want to understand what's unique about what you do, and you want to understand your greatest strengths. That's the best way I know. The title of this is Understanding Your Uniqueness and How to Maximize It. I would circle three times, understanding, because what you're trying to do is understand who you are. You're trying to understand where you're smart. You're trying to understand where you're unique. You're trying to understand your greatest strength. You're trying to understand how all that fits together. That's your uniqueness. And then you take that and say, all right, how do I maximize that? Because that's the role I'd like to play mostly for the rest of my life, is to maximize that uniqueness. Well, any questions on this subject? Basically, she's saying that the Strength Finders program has been extremely helpful to them. And basically, a lot of cultures focus on what a person doesn't do well. And Strength Finders basically focuses on what you do well. And you want to develop your culture, the culture you're developing in the church or the organization or the corporation you're in. You want to focus that culture on strength rather than weakness. Like Drucker said, you maximize the strength of the individual, make their weakness irrelevant. To maximize it, you have to know what it is. Strength Finders helps define that for you. And a lot of times, we don't really have the objectivity to see our own strengths. We have strengths that other people see in us, but we don't see in ourselves because of some fourth grade stuff, some stuff that elephant steaks that people put in our minds. But if you get something that's objective, like the Strength Finder inventory, and get other people to give their perspective on it, often it uncovers strengths that we haven't seen in ourselves as well. I was with a group the other day that it was really obvious to them that their whole culture was based on pointing out what people didn't do well. And when they shifted over, they even got the idea of shifting over to what they do well instead of what they don't do well. It was like everyone in the room just got, whoa, this would be exciting to figure out It was actually a residential drug rehabilitation program for teenagers. And they basically said that kids are so oriented to what they don't do well that when they said, if we could take when the parents come in, not just to say to the parents, what is he doing wrong, what is she doing wrong, but focus first on what do you see as their unique strength? And in that context, where would you like to see them grow? And then we sat down with the kid and said, do you realize your parents said this is your strength? What do you see as your strengths? And where would you like to grow? It was like that would be a totally different thing than having in the introductory interview to say, now what problems are you having with your child? And your parents say this is a problem. Instead of focusing on the problems the kid is having, to focus on their strengths, they said would revolutionize everything. It was just an interesting, another application of that. Other questions? Question is, do we concentrate too much on the things we're not good at? In one of the sessions later, I'll talk about the four areas: strengths, weakness, growth areas, and blind spots. I think weaknesses, you should basically ignore them. You basically, if you're not good at dunking a basketball, don't even try to. Don't work at it. But if there's an area you can grow in and you could be good at, like running a computer or something like that, you have growth areas, but there are certain areas you'll never be strong in. You're weak in that area. Just ignore it and focus on your strengths, not your weaknesses. How does aging affect the process of defining your uniqueness? And does aging as you get older help define it? I believe that a high percentage of the definition and redefinition of strength and struggles and all that happens in the early 40s. I find that in the 30s, the focus is just survival. 20s, the focus is survival. Can I survive in the adult world? 30s is success. How big can I get? How fast can I get there, et cetera. The 40s is significance. Is it making any difference? And struggle. The early 40s are the time of self-definition, redefinition. It's what I call midlife re-evaluation. It's sort of saying, I thought I was good at this, I'm not good at it. I thought I didn't think I was good at this, actually it's turned out that I am good at it. And what you're trying to do is figure out, what you're trying to figure out is your life work in your early 40s. You're trying to figure out, what could I see myself doing the rest of my life? And if what you had thought you were going to be good at, you're not good at, you realize, I'll never be good at this. What can I be good at? And it's like, it's a whole redefinition phase right there from 37 to 43 is what I find most people. And I think if those who are over 43 would go back, a lot of your redefinition happened when you were 37 to 43, right in that zone. I wrote a book called Midlife Storm, where I basically explained that there are two things you're trying to wrestle with at 37 to 43. Your dream. Is my dream real? Will I ever make the difference I hope to make? And will my emotional needs ever be met? My needs for love, significance, admiration, recognition, respect, security, acceptance, those kind of needs. Will those ever be met in my life? And that's what leads to midlife reevaluation. Like, what would I have to change to actually get those to work? Midlife crisis, which means, regardless of what the answer is, I'm not going to stay where I am. I'm going to go to this. And midlife dropout, which says, I don't have anything better to go to. I'm just out of here. But the critical phase of redefining our needs, our needs, our strengths, our struggles, all that kind of thing, typically happens right in that zone in my experience. It doesn't say it can't happen other places, but that's where a high percentage of it focuses in.